Chapter 8.
Are you sure they're not going to kill us?
Tyrion questioned, as he remained in the air above the battlefield.
They might just want us all to let our guards down, and then they'll pump us full of arrows.
I don't think so, I told the Silver Dragon telepathically. You heard their leader. If she was going to kill us, they had the perfect opportunity right there. Also, there's no way they'd go through all the trouble of taking us back to their village if they were just going to off us right when we got there. It'd be way too much time and effort, and it would put their entire tribe at risk.
So, should I come down? You think it's safe?
I think so. I guess if it's not, then you can spend all eternity saying I told you so when we're ghosts. The Silver Dragon let out a soft snort, and then his slender figure beat its wings and slowly began to descend down onto the grassy savanna. He landed on the dried-out foliage with a thud, and his eyes darted back and forth between the rhino women.
We have a lot to talk about,
the white-haired leader said.
Such as how you've come to have two dragons on your side with a third one on the way.
I told you, I'm the Draco Rex, literally the Dragon King. My species has the ability to bond with every single type of dragon, so we've used that to my advantage.
Indeed.
The rhino woman nodded slowly.
And what sort of a species would that be? I've never seen anyone like you, or your crewmates either. We are dragonkin,
Darya explained, as she and the rest of my crew approached the rhino women.
At least most of us are, created by Oshun in the image of the great water dragons. And we are Kunag,
Nadir pointed back and forth between herself and Lazan.
A race of the greatest warriors you will ever meet. We'll see about that.
Rikuri huffed under her breath.
I am a Niraloop.
Nima stepped forward and placed her hand against her chest.
Designed in the image of the goddess Nira, we are messengers of peace and love.
Who also happen to be some of the best archers around. They may be peaceful, but they are equally as deadly.
I'm a Morpho.
Kandara spoke up with a soft flap of her wings.
We don't really have any special skills or major purpose in life, but we do have these lovely wings.
Kandara did a little bow and fluttered her emerald wings happily.
Fascinating.
The leader of the rhino women mused.
I suppose we should tell you our names as well?
Yeah. That's generally how introductions go.
Forgive me if I come off as a bit harsh.
The white-haired rhino woman apologized.
You're the first visitors we've ever gotten on this island that aren't dragons. Other than that one time when some strange-looking, muscular creatures came here searching for dragon eggs.
Orcs. No wonder you were so suspicious of us.
Is that what they're called?
The leader of the rhino woman wondered.
I called them weaklings.
Rikuri snickered.
I don't think I've ever seen a creature flee as fast as they did when we came at them on our Mirax at full speed.
My name is Batari.
The white-haired woman finally offered.
Queen Mother of the Cheros people.
Nice to meet you, Batari. I offered out my hand for a shake, but the rhino woman just stared at it with a raised eyebrow. In my culture this is how we greet people. I guess I should have realized it was going to be different here.
Indeed.
Batari smirked.
Unfortunately, I can't show you a traditional Cheros greeting without the risk of stabbing a hole through your head. Nadia.
I heard Lazan gasp.
I think I like these women already. Just watch,
Batari explained, as she walked over to Rikuri. Once they were within reach of each other, the two rhino women placed their hands on each other's shoulders. Then they reared back their heads and slammed them together as hard as they could. The sound of clanking ivory echoed through the air, along with an intense, meaty thud, and both of the women grinned at each other as they pulled back their heads and held each other firmly.
See?
Rikuri teased.
If she'd done that to you, there'd be an extra hole in your head.
I appreciate it, then. I shrugged. Either way, I'm excited to learn more about the Cheros people and their culture. Though, I do have one question for you. If that tree we were in is so sacred to your people, why would you actually knock it over?
Because you were in it?
Batari shrugged.
They may be sacred to us, but it was standing in the way of the one thing we put above all, defending our dragons. For that, it had to come down, even if it brought us great sorrow to do so.
Yeah. I really like these women.
That's fine and all.
Mira cleared her throat and stepped to the front of my crew.
But can we get back to the village? We came here with a very important mission, and the less time we waste on formalities, the better.
Rikuri let out a huff as she turned and took a few steps toward Mira. Her brow furrowed as she approached the dragonkin warrior, and her fists were tightened against the sides of her body. Then she leaned in so she was as close to Mira's face as she could possibly be. But Mira didn't even bat an eye. The temperament and body language of the two warrior women were so similar, it was honestly like looking into some sort of funhouse mirror.
And what sort of mission would that be, huh?
Rikuri finally demanded.
Did y'all come to steal more dragon eggs? We're not here to steal anything,
Mira retorted with a scowl.
If you must know, we are actually here to ensure nobody ever steals a dragon egg ever again.
The hornless Chera woman cackled.
Now you're making up problems that just don't exist. Like we said, we don't really get visitors around these parts. So, there wasn't anybody stealing any dragon eggs from us in the first place.
There's more to the world than just this island, you know,
Mira told the rhino woman.
Those ugly green fuckers of mothers you said came here. They're stealing dragon eggs from everywhere else and trying to use them for evil.
Rikuri's brow unfurrowed, and she took a step away from Mira as her expression lightened. Still, she kept her arms crossed around her chest.
Nobody is stealing any eggs from this island. Not while we're around, that is. Guarding the eggs on this island is our one purpose in life, and we'd be pretty shit at it if we ever let anyone get away with an egg, wouldn't we?
So the legends are true,
Jonas gasped, and his eyes were full of wonder.
This is the island where dragons come to nest.
Some dragons.
Another rhino woman spoke up as she fiddled with her short bow.
We've never gotten a water dragon here before, even though we know what that is. My name's Ashanti, by the way.
Ashanti was a bit leaner than the other rhino women, with short black hair shaved down to her skull. Atop her forehead sat three horns, one that was quite large, followed by a somewhat shorter one, and then finally one at the top that was little more than a pointed nub. She had the same types of white tribal markings on her gray skin, but hers were a lot more spread out and didn't seem to have any sort of pattern.
How do you know what George is if you've never encountered his kind before?
Kandara questioned.
Call it a blessing.
Ashanti continued without looking up from her weapon.
Since we Chero people were created specifically to protect dragons, we are born with the knowledge of every type of dragon in existence.
Every single type?
Kandara and Jonas both gasped at the same time.
Yep,
Ashanti stated matter-of-factly.
All 25 of them.
25? There are 25 different types of dragons.
Did you not hear me the first time?
Ashanti grumbled. Jonas grabbed onto his chest as if he were about to have a heart attack, and then he started to breathe rapidly as he doubled over.
25 species of dragons. That's much more than I imagined.
Suddenly, Batari let out a sharp whistle, and all eyes turned back to her.
The village is nearly 10,000 mere strides from here, and night will soon be upon us,
the white-haired leader announced.
We should get going now, or else we won't be back before we're plunged into darkness.
We have night vision.
That's not what she's worried about,
Ashanti chuckled.
Didn't you all sleep out here last night? I'm sure you all heard those strange sounds, right? Those are all creatures out there just waiting to tear you limb from limb. You might have been safe all the way up in the tree, but trust us, you don't want to be down on the ground when night falls. Not on this island.
Something in the way Ashanti uttered the words made me realize she was dead serious. The sounds of the grasslands at night were something else. Something that made my skin crawl and shook me to my very core. If that was what happened when I heard them, then I could only imagine what it'd be like if I was face to face with any of these monsters. Back to the village it is, then. But I've got to ask, how far is a mere stride? I've never used that measurement of distance before. All 10 of the Chera women looked around at each other and then at me like I was out of my mind. Finally, Rikuri spoke up.
A mere stride? Which is made up of 4 mere steps?
She explained, as if that would help.
If it's going to be nightfall when we get back, it must be some time.
Mira noted.
Probably a few hours, perhaps?
Easily.
The sooner we get back, the better.
Batari repeated.
Come, you may ride on the Mirax if you please, since that'll be much quicker than walking.
As the rhino woman spoke, the giant ant that belonged to Rikuri scuttled over and bowed its head for its master. Rikuri gave it a quick pat on the head before she threw her leg over its thorax and hoisted herself up.
Anyone want to ride with me?
The warrior woman asked in a flat tone.
We will,
Zarya announced, before she turned to me with a whisper.
Daria and I can pick her brain about combat techniques as we travel. Oh, good thinking, sister.
Daria grinned.
If we can get to know their fighting style, perhaps we can start to mimic it ourselves.
With that settled, the two golden-scaled twins rushed over to Rikuri's aunt and pulled themselves up behind her.
I'll probably just fly,
Kandara said with a scrunched-up face.
I've never been a huge fan of bugs, anyway.
I'll fly as well. Does anyone want the lift?
I'll go with you, Tyrion,
Mira announced.
If these horned women try anything funny, we can burn them to a crisp.
Yay!
The silver dragon feigned enthusiasm. I guess everyone else needs to hop onto an ant, then. Let's get to it.
Not you, though.
Mira stopped me with an outstretched arm.
Since you're the Draco Rex, it would look much more official if you rode into the village on the back of your own dragon.
The jade-haired beauty was right. I was about to head to a village full of people I'd never met before. And it would definitely make a way better impression if I sauntered in atop a deadly, water-breathing dragon, instead of them seeing me clinging to the back of one of their warriors on top of a scuttling ant. George, I asked my bondmate telepathically, do you think you've got the stamina to carry me 10,000 mere strides? I guess we'll find out, dear one, George snickered. The hefty, blue-scaled water dragon lumbered over to my position and smiled at me like a dog who was about to get a treat. I scratched the underside of his mouth, which sent him into a fit of humming and an expression of euphoria. Then, once the dragon had his fill of my scratches, he stepped back and knelt down so I could get onto him. So I climbed up onto my bondmate and watched as all the rest of my crew got onto the ants. Then, once we were all in place, Batari let out a long whistle, and we began to move forward. The legs of the oversized ants scuttled like a cartoon character as they launched forward, and George, Tyrion, and Kandara were all left in the dust.
Wow, I really hope that 10,000 mere strides isn't very far, because I'm not sure how long I'll be able to keep up such a pace. What's the matter, old man? I thought you told your kids you could run faster than I could fly. That's because I can.
George raised his head and narrowed his eyes at the younger reptile.
Looks like you're gonna have to prove it then,
the silver dragon snickered. Tyrion beat his wings and then propelled himself forward through the sky. Kandara was right behind him, though the Morpho woman wasn't anywhere near as fast as the silver dragon. Meanwhile, George let out a deep sigh before his hind end squatted down and wiggled like a cat preparing to pounce. Then he shoved off and we both went airborne momentarily. The water dragon hit the ground running, and the wind began to rush past my face as we bounded across the savannah. The three parties caught up to the ants in no time, so we kept on that pace for nearly an hour. We passed several more tall trees, a small lake, and even a couple herds of animals I couldn't identify, and the landscape began to elevate as its terrain became rockier and sparser. Eventually, Batari let out another whistle, and the ants slowed to a more leisurely gait.
The most dangerous part is over,
the white-haired leader explained.
Now that we've cleared the open plains, we should be safe. The Chero village is right on the other side of this mountain.
If these creatures are as deadly as you claim, can't they just come over the mountains and attack your village?
Of course they can,
Ashanti replied.
That's why we have mounted riders on guard at the edge of our village at all times of the day. Should anything come over the mountain, they sound the alarm, and then we ride out to meet them. It actually happens more often than you would think.
I don't know if I'd call your village safe, then.
Honora chuckled.
Oh?
Ashanti snorted.
You just experienced our abilities as warriors firsthand, and you still doubt we can keep our village safe?
I never said that.
Honora's sunflower yellow eyes glanced downward.
It's just usually when you claim something is safe, it is because the chances of danger appearing are like a coconut that's been left out in the sun for too long. It's still technically there, but it's mostly withered away.
With us at the guard, that's exactly what it's like.
The triple-horned warrior nodded.
So, I hate to sound like I'm mocking you or your people.
Nemo spoke up.
But I simply have to ask, you keep saying the tree we were staying in was sacred.
It is.
Batari agreed.
The cloud brush is symbolic of the god Tembori's agreement with the goddess Ta. Though the creatures of the land may never touch the sky as she did, they will always be blessed with majestic visitors created in Ta's image.
The dragons, I guessed.
The dragons,
the white-haired woman confirmed.
The cloud brushes are just like us land dwellers. No matter how sturdy our foundations or how large and powerful we become, we will always be striving for the heavens in vain.
That's way deeper than anything in our mythology.
I heard Nadir whisper to Lazan.
I think our lone god was slaughtered by his own wife after she gave him a child and was no longer useful.
My eyes went wide at what I was hearing. I really hoped that was a practice of just their goddess and not something I needed to worry about once the Kunag had their children. Then again, it never really sounded like the Kunag people believed the myths they told each other. They always talked about them more like stories, things they'd tell their children as they put them to bed, rather than anything like a true religion's canon that they followed to a T. For my sake, I hoped I was right. Okay, so your guy's sole purpose is to protect the dragons from those who mean them harm. Our goals align perfectly, then. We want to make sure those ugly green men who came to your island before don't steal any more dragon eggs or kill any more dragons.
We've already seen the way they treat their dragons, too.
Kendara sniffled.
They don't form bonds with them like we're supposed to. Instead, they keep them in chains and force them to do their vile bidding. I'm almost certain they abuse the poor creatures, too.
The green monsters have a dragon?
Batari gasped.
They certainly didn't get it from here.
We've seen them in action. They go around to different islands where they pillage, murder, and steal anything that's in their paths. They've come close to having fire-breathing dragons on multiple occasions, but thankfully we've always been there to stop them.
They did get their hands on a wind dragon, though. We fought against that the last time we encountered the orcs.
You fought against a wind dragon and lived to tell the tale?
Rikuri gaped like she couldn't believe her ears.
How is that possible?
We had some help. There were a bunch of fire-breathing dragons in the sky fighting it at the same time, and we had to sacrifice a full-sized ship to take the thing out.
Take it out?
Batari boomed as the fleet of ants screeched to a halt. The white-haired rhino woman flipped around on her aunt and stared me down with intense eyes. The rest of the Chero women stared at me like I was on trial, too, so I just gave them a nervous smile. We had to, I explained with caution. It had to die or else it was going to kill us and all of the dragons around us.
Don't be foolish,
Ashanti huffed.
Wild dragons would never do any harm to other wild dragons.
This thing wasn't wild, I shook my head. It was allied with the orcs, probably because they'd been abusing it into doing their bidding since it was a baby.
As much as I hate to say this,
Kendara added,
it was better to put the beast out of its misery. The poor thing was already too far gone to be saved. Even if we'd somehow figured out how to defeat it without using lethal force, the orcs surely would have punished it for failing in its mission. It was honestly an act of mercy as well as self-preservation.
Batari's narrowed black eyes stared me down for what felt like ages, until she finally turned around and let out a whistle command. The ants started to move forward again, but now there was a strange tension in the air. I guess I understood the predicament. These women's sole purpose in life was to defend dragons from harm, so the thought of one of them being killed, even if it was necessary, was sure to rattle their cages a bit. We continued on in this awkward tension without another word for nearly 2 hours. Our caravan wandered up the mountain until we were practically in the clouds, where the air was thinner and the terrain became even more treacherous. But we eventually hit a spot where the ground leveled off. We were at the peak, and my heart swelled with happiness at the serenity that laid before us. Down below, near the base of the mountain, there was a large village made up of crude brown bricks and thatched roofs. Even though its construction was somewhat crude, the whole area was laid out in a well-organized grid pattern. Hell, I was pretty sure I even saw what looked like a roundabout or two, and figures of both humanoids and insectoids bustled through the streets as they dodged in and out of buildings, which appeared to be up to 3 stories tall. Even though I wasn't down there yet to check it out, I could already see the Chero people were much more societally advanced than most of the other races I'd met so far. Beyond the Rhino people's village was another sprawling, long savanna, dotted with cloud-brush trees and tall, wispy grass that swayed back and forth in the breeze. There were hills all over the place, as well as herds of animals that munched on the natural flora. Above all, the sun slowly moved through the sky as we approached sunset, and the entire scene was lit with a warm, serene red glow. Wow, I muttered aloud.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
Batari finally spoke up, and her tone wasn't nearly as agitated as it was before.
This is the greatest view on the entire island. That's why we decided to build our village here. It was a sign from Tambori,
Ashanti added.
When we were first created, we didn't have a place to live. We wandered the brush for several months, hanging out at the top of cloudbrush trees and attempting to make camp on the ground. Between the harsh conditions and the predators all around us, we lost many good women in those times.
But then, one day as we scaled this mountain,
the leader took over.
We came over this peak just as the sky fire began to go out. It was such a beautiful view that we took it as a sign. A sign that this is where our people belonged. So, the rest is history.
As I glanced over the horizon, I saw all sorts of strange creatures. But one thing was noticeably missing. Where are the dragons? The way Jonas described this island, it sounded like we weren't going to be able to walk half a mile without running into one of the deadly creatures.
Maybe in its heyday.
Batari's dark eyes closed as sorrow filled her face.
Before the time of the Great Famine. Before the Scudawar.
The Scudawar? I asked with a raised eyebrow. What the hell is that?
A creature sent from the pits of the underworld itself.
Rikuri growled.
It is the reason our land is not as fertile as it once was. It started with our livestock.
Batari sighed.
It would sneak into our village and eat all of our animals, sometimes even our fellow Cheros. We were eventually able to fight it off with the help of our land dragons, but most of them were killed off in the process. And the ones that didn't die ran away.
Ashanti added.
We've been without our sacred protectors ever since.
Now, Ashanti.
Batari scolded.
We've been over this many times. Even if some of them abandoned us, we owe our land dragons a great deal of gratitude. Since the great battle of the plains, the Scudawar has remained in his own territory and hasn't bothered us once.
I guess you're right.
The shaved-headed woman grumbled.
I still think it was cowardly for them to run.
The land dragons are only native to this island.
The leader reminded her friend.
They aren't like the others who can travel to any land they choose. If they are wiped out here, then their entire species would go extinct. We're in a very similar situation given our replenishment issue, so I would have done the same.
Replenishment issue?
Mira interjected.
Were all of your men killed in battle, too?
The 10 Chero women let out a collective, deep, guttural laugh at Mira's words, and the dragonkin warrior crossed her arms and harumphed as they continued to laugh at her.
We don't have men on this island,
Rikuri finally explained.
We never have, and we probably never will. Wait.
Honora shook her head.
If you don't have any men, then how do you reproduce? And where did you even come from?
I told you. We were created by our gods and goddesses specifically to act as the defenders of this island. We were born from the earth and the will of Tambori.
Wait, so you weren't talking about your ancestors before? You meant you specifically founded this village. How old are all of you?
I don't know how your people measure time,
Ashanti said.
But I've been around for 330 season cycles.
We all have.
Batari nodded.
We were all created at the same time.
So, what? Once you all die of old age or are killed in battle, your whole race just dies out? You don't have any way to replenish your population.
Perhaps.
The white-haired rhino woman shrugged.
It is a great irony of our existence, Draco Rex. All of us Chero women are blessed with the ability to reproduce, but we were not given any men with which to do so.
The light bulb went on inside my head and in my pants, but I held myself back from making a suggestive comment. In the words of the great Marshall Mathers, this looked like a job for me. However, I'd just met these women, and we were still trying to gain their trust. I didn't want to overstep my boundaries right at that moment, especially during a time when they were all acting somber. Still, the whole thing was an intriguing prospect.
We'll be gone soon anyways,
Rikuri added with a huff.
If the Great Famine keeps up, there'll be nothing for us to eat, and we'll all wither away like striped-backed bones in a groofy-ick stomach.
That's when it hit me. The best way I could help these women was to bring them out of this famine, and maybe even offer up myself as a way to help them repopulate their dwindling numbers. If I did that, maybe they'd finally trust us. And if they trusted us, then maybe they would take us to a place where we could incubate our dragon egg. Do you know what's causing the famine? I asked the Chero women.
Oh, it's obvious.
Ashanti growled.
It's the Scudawar. Even though he stays away from our village now, he's taken over all of the plains beyond that first range of hills. He devours any creature that even dares to enter his territory, so all we're left with are the few wanderers who make it over to the grasslands you see before you.
Or we are forced to go over the mountain to hunt,
Rikuri explained.
There are more animals on that side, but the journey is long and treacherous, and we still often come back without anything.
What about the plants? Can't you grow anything?
Most of the flora here is toxic.
Batari shook her head.
We found that out the hard way early on.
Then we'll just have to find the ones that aren't and help you cultivate them. Consider it our gift to you guys for letting us live and bringing us back to your village.
I'll consider it.
Batari smirked.
Now come, Draco Rex. The Chero village awaits.
The ants began to meander down the side of the mountain, down toward the village of the Rhino Women. In the meantime, all I could think about was potential solutions. And that was to face down the deadly monstrosity known as the Scudawar.